The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, NetWealth Investments Limited, ABN 85090 569 109, AFSL 230975, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
I'm Patrick, Head of Technology at professional services firm Collins SBA. I'm a former financial advisor who just loves solving business problems and creating better client experiences using technology. Join me each week as we unpack the tech on offer to advice professionals, stay on top of tech trends, and help you break free from the analysis paralysis experience when building and maintaining a great tech stack.
Discover a world of advice. Join Matt Heiner, CEO of NetWealth, as he chats to industry professionals and thought leaders on the latest technologies, business models, changing demographic patterns, and general trends impacting wealth management. Listen at netwealth.com.au/between meetings. This ad is presented by NetWealth Investments Limited and does not consider individual circumstances. Seek professional advice and read the relevant PDS to determine if NetWealth is appropriate for you. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance.
To give listeners of the Advice Tech podcast another avenue to solve technology problems that matter most and efficiently evaluate the landscape of Advice Tech providers, Ensemble has launched an Advice Tech space on its platform. If you want to know how your advice peers are solving their tech challenges, big and small, it's the place to go. Head to the Ensemble platform or use the link in the show notes to join today.
Today's episode is an update chat with Clinton Cunningham from AdviseWell. So Clinton first joined me all the way back in November 2024, which was episode 111, where we unpacked AdviseWell's mission to tackle the advice gap using AI. And fast forward to now, the landscape has shifted very quickly. And in this conversation, we delve into what's changed over that past 12 months. So how AI adoption in advice has matured beyond simple file notes, why agents, orchestration layers, and model context protocol or MCP are becoming practical and not theoretical, what the cost of code approaching zero actually means for advice businesses, and how platforms like AdviseWell are evolving from back office support tools into full end-to-end intelligence layers across advice teams. Clinton also shares insights from the US and UK markets, including how large firms are rolling out AI at scale and what Australian advice practices can learn from that. And so if you're wondering whether advice or AI in advice is still about transcripts or whether we're entering the era of strategic AI assistants running workflows across your stack, this episode will help you frame what's next. And given this is an update episode, I started by asking Clinton what the newest piece of tech he owns is.
Patrick, the newest tech, it's nothing too flashy, but my kids got me a pair of headphones, some nice Sony deep, clear sounding, good for EDM programming and typing out thousands of emails headphones. It's not flashy, but before that, I had a pair that I bought at Coles in desperation because I needed something about 3 years ago, and it was duct taped and wire taped and falling apart. And my 5 year old felt sorry for me. She said, let's get Dad some earphones, some headphones for his birthday. So, pretty happy with that, to be honest.
You beauty. Have you noticed a change in your sort of flow state when you got them on in terms of, as you mentioned, coding emails?
Yeah, 1,000% up for sure. I think, jokes aside, if I'm wearing the AirPods in my ears all the time, it actually starts to feel sort of get a bit painful, a bit annoying and aggravating, whereas sort of the over-the-head is a bit of a relief from that. Plus, it's got great noise cancelling.
I'm so with you. It's just, I'm absolutely with you. It feels like that's adding all this pressure into your head, and the only time they're good is sort of on airplanes and certainly not taking phone calls. So I'm with you. And then if we fast forward in terms of, we had you on the show, AdviseWell, Clinton, episode 111, all the way back in November 2024. I asked you this question last time, but has it changed? Are there one or two ways, maybe differently, that you're using AI personally, professionally? How are you using it today, if I had to ask you?
You know, still using it almost excessively. My bill's gone up and my tiers have gone up. So I probably use a pro tier of everything and sit back and go, how can I justify $300 a month when I didn't even pay for this 2 and a bit years ago? So, you know, you use whether it's ChatGPT, Grok, or Claude, or everything in between. I use a smattering to get a fair view of a particular problem. Will I have it, you know, whether it's a business problem, product problem, or opportunity for create and design? I use all of them. But I think the thing that probably has changed the most in this last week, to be honest, is the launch of the Claude Excel plugin.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Sounds quite innocuous on the surface of it, but I'm a pretty vanilla Excel user. I love Excel like everyone else, but you know, get me a pivot table and a lookup table and a if then and you've lost me, right? So now I can actually sit with essentially Claude Code, which is, you know, one of the smartest coding agents inside Excel, and start spinning up financial sheets, projections, modeling, graphs just by asking. And so don't have to worry about lookups or pivots and the things I've been able to do and, you know, analyze a lot of the business data that I use just in Excel with Claude has been, to be honest, saved me a hell of a lot of time and money if I had to sort of pay someone to do it.
Oh, goodness me. So yeah, just confirming tiers and not tiers. So do you have a go-to? Like Claude feels like that's where it's heading, at least on the, I guess, the professional side of things, the enterprise side. What's your go-to in terms of you have to pick a default?
I think I would never pick a default. I think personally, it's horses for courses. I go to Claude for very technical, very straightforward rationale and reasoning. I go to ChatGPT for the fact that it can actually, you know, remember everything I've talked about in the last year, and it's got a very good way of natural writing and creative writing. So I use two as different consults and different actions. And then I'll use Grok if I just really need to hear the hard truth, because there's nothing Grok holds back on.
Goodness me, I love it. And then if we, I mentioned this sort of episode 111 back in November 2024. Do you mind giving us a quick refresher on yourself, Clinton, and AdviseWell? And I guess, yeah, ultimately, what problem is AdviseWell solving as well today?
Sure, no problem. My background, two parts. I'm a software engineer by trade, management consultant by training. So I've spent my career predominantly in financial services, tech, and digital transformation. And when I started studying a long, long time ago, when I studied AI, it was genetic algorithms, and it was all the AI winter, and this will never go anywhere. Now, 20 years later, fast forward, it's cool again, and it's actually useful, and I can dust off my tech chops and actually get stuff done. So working in financial services, particularly in superannuation and wealth management, myself and some colleagues who are really passionate about the wealth gap in not only in Australia, but globally, and how we can help solve and contribute to that. You know, AI was a clear accelerant in terms of productivity for, you know, personal productivity and business. And we really saw how it could close the divide between, you know, managing, delivering, and creating advice. And so we struck out about a year ago with AdviseWell to go and solve the advice gap by actually helping financial advisors and firms generate and deliver advice. So first and foremost, we support the back office. How do we actually take large quantities of data, synthesize that, and, you know, generate strategy, records of advice, strategies of advice, and everything in between? And more recently, fast forward 12 months, we've had a lot more advisors putting us in to say, what about us? So you've got a proliferation of financial note-taking AI and meeting bots. We've joined the fray and brought that into our solution. So we now can actually support the back office, those actually managing, delivering, and building advice, as well as the front office, the advisor at the coalface with clients. So we have a full end-to-end flow where we can actually capture all your client conversations, take you through file noting, parapanel requests, strategy papers, records of advice, strategy statements of advice, as well as compliance and review, all in one platform and all in a pretty seamless manner.
Wowee. So pivot there. Is that, I'm just thinking about, you mentioned advisors feeling left out, and is that introduction of that sort of product or feature really about context or creating that sort of end-to-end process? If you've got the meeting, you've got the transcript at the very least, it's one less bit of information to pump in there, for example.
Precisely. It was about streamlining process and managing context. When we had the back office receiving all the content, the parapanel request, all the discovery docs, the fact find, that operated incredibly well. We actually started having parapanel say, well, hey, instead of me checking this data for mismatch, can I get the advisor to run the report so I don't have to go back to them afterwards? And so we give the advisor the access to consume all the client data and find out that the driver's license on their bank statement is different to the one on their driver's license, and go back to the client almost immediately. And that started to trickle into file notes, recording meetings, transcribing meetings, detailing out those file notes. And more the back office being getting a better experience because now they had a level of standardization in terms of what file notes they were getting or parapanel requests. And so it was a bit of a win-win. You know, back office were getting their ability to sort of control and constrain the level of content that kept coming in. And advisors got a quick win. Things were recorded and sent straight to the parapanel.
Awesome. Learning happens every day through meetings, podcasts, professional conversations. Make every moment count at cpdcheck.com.
And then does that mean, I'm trying to build the tech stack around AdviseWell now, and I'm jumping around already, but that becomes a core piece of the stack, right? Is there really anything else you need if it's done right, if it's adopted the way you intend?
You know, we try to think of ourselves as the intelligence layer or the context layer, not the source of truth in terms of your core product stack. So yeah, there's still a place for CRMs and there will be for some time. What we're looking to do is say, our clients use CRMs, they use modeling tools. You know, most of them want one tool, still stuck with 10. We represent, you know, we recognize that there's a lot of tools to organize and orchestrate. And so we're taking on the orchestration of all those tools to produce advice. So slowly but surely, we're integrating to more and more of those products. And we want to be the overlay between an advisor or a parapanel and their core systems of record.
Yeah, wow. So as part of that orchestration layer, would it be a fair thing to say it's sort of like the glue that pulls everything together, pulls the mess that can be a result of those 10 systems and make sense of it all? I'm jumping ahead already, but there was a great post from Peter Warne at Finura Group talking about infrastructure and advice efficiency being treated like a craft instead of an infrastructure problem. Is that the immediate problem you're tackling, is that infrastructure layer of being able to, whatever stack you use, get it into AdviseWell somehow, whether that's through integration or through being advisors and support staff are now sort of copy and paste merchants. I think I am definitely in terms of going into AI tools. But is that layer, that just to expand on that a bit more, so making sense of the mess that is a result of different tech stacks per business or per even advisor in some cases, or just different ways of working?
I think it's quite nuanced, particularly when we start getting into the infrastructure context and orchestration. There's certainly a lot of tools that do a lot of that. There are a lot of claims or integrations across the board. It's really hard to pick apart. I think for us, you know, if you look at where the main value came out of the generative AI, it really started from a personal productivity perspective. And it solved small problems really well. Conversations, research, recording, transcription. And what we saw in that is it's a very consumer first or user first experience. And what we're doing is bringing that experience to your business stack. So trying to learn a new CRM or a CRM update or a new modeling tool or a new access tool, it can be time consuming. It can be different when you're onboarding different people. And what we want to do is one by one, make those experiences a lot smoother, a lot simpler. Whether that's for now, bring your own data from those platforms, or as a lot of these tools are advancing, more and more easily integrating with that, I guess, that wide tech stack. And I think I sort of stopped on the infrastructure side because there is, and I read that post too, and I thought it was quite an interesting, the comments are where all the action happens, Pat. And I thought it was quite an interesting piece because, you know, my experience in banking and wealth management and even advice at, you know, from small business to medium to large, is integration is a consistent issue across every industry, to be frank. And it's probably predominantly because it's quite hard to incentivize, you know, incumbents to provide their data out because it costs them time and money. So that doesn't mean that it won't be done, it can't be done. I think there's a lot of really interesting ways of partnering between different providers. And we're seeing that more and more now in the market, which I think is quite sort of comforting to see Australia sort of a dominant, sort of pick up on that thread, because the US do it quite well. The UK are getting there, but how do we do more partnering between organizations and find synergies instead of the walled gardens that I think people battle through? That's probably the first point around the main challenge that I've seen, and you know, I've seen across industries for a very long time. The question mark is around, does AI face that same problem or does it leapfrog it? And I'm not going to put my money down just yet, but I think the rapid development of AI and the products and capabilities coming out was so surprising that it is something that we could look back in a year and go, how did AI just solve integration, you know, without a blip? So that's the future I'm looking forward to. I think everyone else is too. And so that's all what we're working through.
I'm with you. I always bang on about tools like Waccado, which would be our own sort of orchestration layer or glue or middleware, if you want to call it that in an enterprise way. But it would not be uncommon to sit there and read the API schemas or the data model of one tool versus this tool and then have to try and shape it or transform it to go somewhere else. And a lot of that time is wasted time because sometimes it's actually becomes about, I think about integration now more about actually just seeing the data or actually being able to retrieve it or just visualize it in that tool rather than having to have the, you know, traditional sort of, I need a copy of that in this system and I need to synchronize it across both systems and accommodate for how we use it, et cetera. So I'm totally with you on where that's heading, and it's exciting as well as makes me a little nervous around trying to, I don't know, yeah, trying to, I'm not sure what the right word is, but not run your business on vibes, definitely not that, but it can be incredibly challenging, as you mentioned, with the walled gardens returning and the pay-to-play for APIs and having different decisions being made on whether tools integrate with others or not and, you know, revenue share models, that sort of thing, that we need a solution that suits everyone. And, yeah, it's really challenging. So I'm with you. Can we do a pulse check on where you see like AI adoption in general and advice? Like where are we? We've clearly evolved past file notes. As you mentioned, Clinton, in the start, you actually started with, I guess, the next problem, and then you've gone back and solved that original sort of problem or the trendy sort of 2023, 2024 problem of file notes. Like where are we in general and in advice?
So we 6 months ago made a very deliberate pivot in the way we were engaging with our clients. We initially came out of the gate with everyone understands AI, knows how to use it. Here we go, and you're off to the races. But very quickly figured out that adoption is uneven. And while it predominantly, you know, surveys, conversations, you know, over the last 2 years, uptake, usage, and buy-in has gone from 40% to 70% to 98%. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't think that it will make some level of productivity improvement in their day-to-day. What we found is that everybody has different expectations and interpretations of how it will actually do that. And so we've spent a lot of time with going through customers and clients, doing levels of education around how these tools work and operate, how to think of them and treat them, and then how to actually rethink your processes. There's a lot of fatigue around CRM migration projects and switching and selection. You know, adoption fatigue is there as it stands. So you can kind of feel for a lot of these firms who are, you know, now being faced with, great, something new I need to learn. Can I just get on with my job? So it's a fine balance, but the will's there, the view's there, the adoption is there. The second part of that is how do you actually incorporate that into the business and get ROI? And that's what where people are clearly focused now. Quick wins like a file note or a transcript, you know, that's straight off the bat, an easy win. You know, there are 100 tools who do meeting file notes. There are, you know, 30, I think, advisor-based tools globally, just for this segment and market. And you've got Microsoft Copilot, you know, Gemini and Google Workspaces doing the same. So people can clearly see it. Where to next? And so while we've seen that first initial productivity start to improve, the ask now is from general it transcribe to meeting summary, what does this mean for our industry, for wealth management, financial planning? And for us, that's been our initial mission, which is advice. We clearly see that there's opportunity to take unstructured and structured data and add intelligence and get really superior advice out to clients. So where we're seeing a lot of the movement now is for those platforms moving into the advice generation space, the advice support space, to actually take the end-to-end flow, as I've talked about, that we've been clearly focused on. And that requires process evaluation, product selection, and it's a fine line to balance the adoption fatigue versus the actual productivity outcome. So all positive, the right movement. But we're now seeing those organizations figure out how to adapt and change.
Goodness me. And yeah, I remember before we hit record, we talked about how just how quickly this stuff is moving. And, you know, not to date this, but even today we've got changes to the, I guess, the MCP standard. And was it Claude Bot, I think you were mentioning, which is just this insane thing that can do anything you want on your desktop. And so PSA would be, don't let it do that. But do you see, as part of this, in part of these sort of specific tools, like talking about all the note takers out there, the specific tools around financial planning or financial advice, do you see those continuing to niche into that area? Or do you see tools like Claude or Anthropic, OpenAI, sort of taking a lot of that away? Like even in the example of, you know, in theory, Microsoft or Copilot should have a better Excel experience on the AI side than Claude, but somehow Claude does it better. Like, do you see these sort of global mega tools becoming sort of general purpose for advice as well? Or do you think there really is that path to play, or that opportunity for tools like AdviseWell and those others out there that will shine in those areas of the specific stuff that you need to do as an advisor or in the back office?
You know, that is the, I think, the $100 trillion question these days. The question going around is, will everything be a chat interface? Will we need to engage with technology at all? Does the work get done? And I know a year ago that seemed a 3 to 5 to 10 year at best. And these days you look at the progress and you sit and go, wait a minute, you know, are things changing quicker than I can actually adapt to? I'd say the jury is out. You know, I'm a techno-optimist, so I do see that stuff coming in fast and hard. I think there's two ways to think about it. The first is deciding whether you're going to be on the vanguard of trying out all these tools on the bleeding edge. And I think there's value to that because you can start to make your own decisions on, is this new Claude tool a great personal productivity tool for me and my team? Is it a platform productivity tool for my business? Or is it a collaboration tool for pods in my team? And that level of agility is required if you want to be adopting the latest and greatest. And they're two sides that you're going to go through a lot of duds before you find a gem. But if you find a gem, you know, you can significantly improve your productivity and bottom line. And we're seeing folks do that who, you know, who have picked up these tools, you know, file notes, then laggards catching up to it a little later, right? The other way is thinking of it, you know, will everything just be a chat interface? And I think the hard part about that is, one, we can't predict it. And two, we've probably got bigger business and societal challenges if, you know, ChatGPT or Claude or Microsoft have essentially leveled the playing field for every industry. Why I think if that even would happen incredibly slowly is because, unfortunately, people are slow to change. You know, consumers and businesses, countries and regulations and government and governance are slow to change. And those are all quite difficult to do at scale because OpenAI or Google would need to really understand the Australian district and geography and rules and regulations before they might tackle something like financial advice. And so for me, that tells me that's too big a task for them to take on. They would look at the app layer, which is where we're all sort of playing now, to say, well, how does the app layer innovate on top of our core intelligence layer? Because they're looking to power the intelligence of the world. So, and if you look at the bigger companies trying to maybe force down some of these tools as bolt-ons with your operating system release, I try not to mention names, but the general consensus is they've left people feeling a little bit underwhelmed with how a lot of these AI tools are sort of rammed down existing platforms and tools. Whereas the bottom-up approach of apps coming in and tackling very niche industries has seen a lot more adoption, value, and productivity. And the good thing with all of these is there's rarely much lock-in other than app apathy. You sign up, use it for 3 months, you switch your tool, but it's not a core system that you're making a big decision about.
Great points. Just a couple of those I want to pick up on. So you mentioned collaboration, which is, I think, until now, been very single player focused, especially on the, you know, the LLM or the ChatGPT or the Claude side, where, or Gemini, whatever the tool is, where the extent of sharing or collaborating is, you know, sharing this chat and it will just give you a link to what the literal chat was with that person. Does AdviseWell change that with the introduction of, I guess, getting the advisor involved as well? Like you mentioned, that sort of end-to-end process, because you've got both people in the tool or more than one role or person in the tool to actually use the same tools to get to the same outcome. Does that actually make sense as a question?
I hear you. I hear what you're saying. And the short answer is yes. I think there's a really great Reid Hoffman, founder of LinkedIn, was saying earlier this year around the challenge with where enterprises are battling with getting AI in, is they're starting it as a corporate action. We're going to imbibe every solution we've got into it. We're going to roll out training, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas the right way to do it is starting at the place work happens, and work happens at the coalface, which is client conversations and team conversations, which again comes back to meetings. And so for us, having a team who can instantaneously share a meeting to everyone in the team who is there or not means that context is immediately disseminated across the team, whether someone's going to read the transcript or asks AI. And secondly, because all client context that's gathered in that, whether it's files or data or, you know, parapanel requests, is in the same space. Again, it's not just the, you know, the teammate that you've got today. It's the one on the side who picks up something, who can bring something to it. So finding having that single layer and having all the data captured, all those conversations, all those documents in a very accessible manner, you know, through chats and through visual, starts to make it a more of a team sport.
I love it. And then just on the app layer side, you mentioned, we talked about, I mean, when you were on the Advice Tech podcast for the first time, episode 111, all the back in November 2024, I think that was the same week that MCP as a standard was even announced or released. Is that how you're thinking about, I mean, you know, one of the methods that Advisor could be used, like in those tools, like being able to, at that app layer or the advisor sort of context layer of, you know, make sense of the Australian financial planning rules and regulations, what data do we need, what do we not need, and be able to have, I guess, advisor used in a multimodal way, whether it's Claude or Grok or ChatGPT or, you know, a Copilot agent, et cetera. Once again, not sure if that question makes sense, but being able to reduce reliance on that front end or, you know, the experience of being in that app itself.
Mm. I know you and I both have a bit of a technical slant, so we know exactly every aspect of what MCP does and mean. I think it's probably worth stepping back for just a moment, right? You know, when we started, you know, over a year ago, we talked about agents, right? And agents being these utilitarian tools that could start to do everything and operate as a quasi-employee. Now, we said way back then, we're looking forward to what we'll do in a year's time. I think a lot more folks would point on, you know, this is going to change everything overnight. So we've spent a year working on agents, agent frameworks, and agents in the context of financial advice and financial services. And along that journey, alongside the industry, there have been another number of innovations on top of agents. So you call that MCP. There's MCP, which is shorthand for Model Context Protocol. It's a very simple way for an AI to speak to other systems. You know, think of it as an API, but far more simple. There's also things called tools and skills and markdown files. These are all just attributes of how agents get smarter. So I think that the best way to think about it is to abstract out of that, because there will be something tomorrow that we haven't even covered yet. Skills is probably a month or two old, that will come out. But these are really just the capabilities that these agents are bringing on. They're going from chat to be able to speak to another system by themselves, to be able to write to a database all by themselves, to all of a sudden learn how to use the latest programming tool that was released yesterday because they just read the website with a special tool. So it's more about these are the rounding capabilities that our agents are getting as they progressively start taking on more and more work. So just to sort of wrap, I guess, where those capabilities that agents are. Now, where we are today, and when you start to see things like Claude Coworker or the ChatGPT Atlas in browser, we're now starting to see how those agents can start to interact with the world in our day-to-day lives. My software engineering team have been doing that for a year using agents for coding, which is really at the leading edge of agents in any industry. Software engineering is easily the most disrupted industry by this tool. And where we're seeing there is these agents autonomously starting to take on tasks, speak to different systems, learn new skills, to the point that most of these AI tools that, you know, ChatGPT, Anthropic, and Microsoft are building are essentially all coded by AI themselves. Programmers are watching and not coding anymore, which is pretty significant after 12 months ago. Now, that's the paradigm that we're bringing personally. We're bringing into financial advice, where our agent can actually update your data within anything you can do within AdviseWell, it can do, whether that's building you a template, whether that's updating data, whether that's telling you about what you need to know about a client that you haven't seen in a while and it needs to go and fetch all the meeting notes, all the way to it figuring out how to send a message to check in on them 3 weeks later, you know, based on a point they spoke in the conversation. So that's where we're getting to, and that's where we are sort of on the cusp, is these agents having these capabilities to really interact with the world.
I love it. Thanks for breaking it down for us, Clinton. And just maybe a couple of practical examples for my own understanding, maybe using, you know, a biased example of me on the CRM side. Would you be saying, like, you've got a file note where, like, a big part of these file note tools is context is stuck there, and you've got to go back into, you know, CRM land, or as we talked about, walled garden, big chunky, to update a mobile number or the address or a goal or an objective. You're sort of alluding to, or you're saying directly, that the agent that is called upon, or the whatever trigger it is inside AdviseWell, will trigger the right tool to update the CRM that that firm uses to say, we need to update the contact details because they just moved house, or new address, or this address is for, you know, mailing only, for example. Is that the sort of really basic examples of CRM updates to the existing architecture? And then we can do obviously more sort of sexy sort of proactive stuff around, as you mentioned, you know, client's portfolio balance is down 7%, their risk profile doesn't really tolerate that, you should reach out to them now to make sure they're okay.
Yes. I mean, I think it's a really good example. MCP is essentially the bridge between the agents and these other systems. So you need the other system to decide, you know, we're going to enable MCP. You're a little bit in the same challenge zone of them enabling and providing you an API. So now we're going to ask those providers to provide us something different, because it makes our lives a lot easier. Equally, it should make their lives a lot easier. So, and it's a lot simpler to implement than the heady days of APIs. I think for those forward-thinking organizations that are looking for, you know, orchestration and integration, it's a quick win.
I love it. And then you alluded to it as well around Claude Cowork and basically, you know, coding tools. I think that was the thing, wasn't it? Like, as in Claude Code actually built a lot of Claude Cowork. So that's a sort of inception within itself. But do you mind sort of talking a little bit about, I guess, the general user experience of a coding agent, and then how that is translated to what Claude Cowork is, and what that sort of means for non-technical or just non-software developer users? Because in my opinion, this does change everything when it comes to what we can do, especially if we're not technical or not spinning up, you know, projects and writing files, etc.
Yeah, and I'll start with the outline of how this has changed software engineering, and then we can start actually looking at how that paradigm applies to, you know, our industry and our businesses, but really any industry and business. But the timeline progression would be simply put, and it was best put by the Anthropic CEO, which was 12 months ago, he was writing 80% code by hand and using autocomplete AI to write the rest of the code. He's now at a position where he spends 20% watching the AI write the code, and he manages multiple agents writing their code. So what does that mean? He might say to his agent, his coding agent, and I see our team do this every day, our user and our customer has this problem. They struggle with X and Y, and we need to figure out a way to elegantly solve that within the constraints of our system, but also in a new and novel way that doesn't necessarily, you know, align with a common pattern that you've seen before. Pause, throw it over to the agent. So you can give it quite large directives and objectives. You're not telling it, put blue on the label, you know, make it green when somebody changes the screen. You're telling them a problem. You're telling them how we need to satisfy that problem and what good looks like. And these agents will go away and they will plan, they will validate, they will understand the existing solution and systems. They will then question and judge themselves against multiple plans to come up with the best possible plan. Then they'll play it back typically to the engineer. So what the engineer is now doing is reviewing their plan and going, that is a great novel way to solve this. You have thought about this holistically. I can see what you're thinking and how you've gone, but also you've made a logical fallacy over here. You know, you haven't connected the dot. Let me help you connect that dot. It connects the dot, and essentially our engineer will say, off you go. And these can run anywhere between 30 to 45 minutes in a day to day. You know, people talk about eating these running into 12 to 13 hours.
Yeah.
It's which is unbelievable. We mentioned the Claude Cowork being coded by Claude was also amazing. It was done in 3 weeks, right? So that level of productivity, I mean, I've been around software engineering all my life, really. I've never seen that level of throughput and high quality throughput, because 6 months ago, there was low levels to medium levels of trust. Now I would honestly probably trust Claude more than a senior engineer in terms of the code that it produces, because it's far less fallible. And this is January 2026. To date us, I think January 2027, it'll be quite hard to even understand how these tools are used. So while it's worth talking through that is, you can start to quickly see how when we translate to, say, a different industry, like financial advice and financial planning, we're working with numbers and we're working with words and intent, and we're solving user outcomes and objectives. And there's a swath of data out there for these agents to use and consume, and every practice and firm has a swath of data to support it. So I see in a very near future, in the way you operate with agents in financial services, in financial planning, is this is my client's scenario. This is all the data we know about them. What would a good outcome look like for them? And you watch your agent create a plan, maybe ask some questions because you haven't actually covered their health status, and it won't answer anything more unless you've covered that. And you'll actually have a conversation, you'll have an interaction with this agent, and then it's off the races. It's doing your modeling, it's going to speak to providers that've got their MCPs, negotiating maybe an insurance price between two different vendors, and it'll come back with a final draft for you. Which, as I say that, it sounds very far out there, but software engineers are doing that, precisely that, at incredible levels of accuracy. I don't see why that doesn't translate, you know, near immediately over to this industry. Outside of regulation, governance, management, and adoption, those are the real hurdles, not the technology.
That's absolutely wild to think about. But also with my sort of small, tiny brain, Clinton, I always sort of limit it to like, oh yeah, one agent doing that at a time. Whereas imagine, like, even just in that example of you spinning up sub-agents, or one agent is managing something else and that's managing something else. Like, you could do that for 5 or 10 clients at once, and maybe that's not even pushing it either. Like, if you just ran that over your whole client base on a daily basis, if you just had that scheduled to run overnight, it would just be insane. The way that you could turn your practice into something that is, you know, a proactive offering, just as one basic example. Do you think with what is happening now, and, you know, just those incredibly realistic and, you know, really close by examples, do you think that's what we will become in terms of, like, knowledge workers of, or think about like a typical financial planning practice of, you know, CSA or reception team member, associate or paraplanner, advisor, et cetera, we'll all just be sort of in meetings or sitting with clients, and then we'll get pinged from that agent and they'll say, hey, I need you to intervene or make a decision on this because I'm either stuck or as an AI, I can't make this decision because it's, for example, you know, personal financial advice. Do you think that's where we'll get to in terms of our, like, daily lives of working, at least in that context of I get pinged, I click approve, review, deny, whatever, and just have meetings all day and just don't really sit near or do technical work? Like, I don't sit in Excel or anything like that, or in the big chunky?
You know, I want to say I hope so, because as much as I like Excel, you know, a life without Excel that just gets done, I could see a lot being a lot more fulfilling.
Yeah.
Right? A life without clicking a drop-down menu and a checkbox and then reading a 100-page document sounds a lot more fun, you know, in terms of work and providing, you know, meaningful work and output. I think that is fast approaching. Yeah. I think there's a lot of hype about displacements and jobs and all the likes. I think that happens with every technical revolution or technological revolution. Ultimately, it creates more jobs than it displaces. And I think this is one of those zones where, particularly, you know, I think financial advice is a deeply personal experience. It has moralistic guidelines around it that needs to be added. There's context outside of just a form that someone's filled out. And I think that's the high value aspects, or part of the high value aspects that a human and an advisor brings to an engagement. And I think taking paperwork away from them is going to make everyone happy. Yes, I mean, I have, you know, I'll parallel this to our software development team. We've just upgraded one or two of our project management teams where I can have a client conversation. We can record that about how we want something changed. I can commit that to my project management tool. And AI will actually build that for us into the solution and then post it to the software stack where my tech lead will review and make sure the code's correct. Now, I don't see much difference between me having a client conversation and then saying to my virtual agent, going, can we kick off, you know, onboarding for Jenny here? And it'll have all their contexts, and it'll send them fact files, and it'll follow them up, and it'll ring their providers, and it'll keep you posted with actions that you need to make. again, the barriers there again are the walled gardens that people put up,
yeah,
and constraints and regulations and people, not the technology.
Yeah, we definitely got to move past which e-signature providers are accepted or ways to actually contact a freaking service provider. I'm with you, but far out, that is a lot to think about. Could I just go back to that example? So you mentioned an actual real-life example now of you might have an AdviseWell business or firm that has requested this feature or function or whatever, this custom bit of technology. And as part of basically hands off the keyboard mode, because the meeting's been recorded in whatever tool, it's somehow landed in your project management tool. I'm not sure what your project management tool is, but because there's agentic capability there that has even gone ahead and actually written that part of the code or that sort of feature to then be presented to someone to review it.
That's it. We record a feature. I log it to my product management tool. My AI picks it up, builds it. Because the value, so prior to this wave, the cost of code was quite significant. You didn't just build something and, you know, hope that it was of any value. The cost of code is close to zero now. So you providing an ask around a feature, sending that off to go and build it, you getting on with your day, getting 5 minutes to review it on your phone or your desktop, there's zero cost other than time. And you actually have a feel for a feature, which is a lot different to how it's, you know, describing it, what it looks like on paper. And you can make iterations back and forth on that. So yeah, having code going close to the cost of zero, the ability to be able to review and preview and edit that increases that time significantly. You know, and still, just like an advisor would stamp an SOA because they've read it back to front and they've made sure it makes sense. Nothing goes to production without my senior architects reviewing that code and making sure it is tip top and safe, yep, and sound.
Goodness me. No, I love the way you framed that there. Goodness me. And then that opens up another can of worms around, I guess, unique experiences per firm or even per person in that same firm. Do you see us getting to a point where, you know, someone's AdviseWell experience or someone's just tech experience is totally different to another firm because of that, you know, just being the time is the only barrier? So, for example, you know, typically if I think about, once again, a CRM or something that you log into, and then there's a front end, and it's what you see on the front end, whether it's a dashboard or these seven fields, whatever. Typically, you'd have to code up or make that app self-service. So someone that wanted to have that ability could, you know, I don't want to see this here, I can see it there. Do you see, just in that example, as maybe a leading point where you might have AdviseWell or any sort of technology where an individual, you know, whether it's in the sandbox or sort of guardrails of that, whatever that app is, but because of those capabilities, they could log in and see something totally different based on what's been rendered in front of them, based on that code that's dynamically generated as a result of what someone entered as their preference, for example.
Got it. Yeah, so the interface actually adapting to the user
and being
on
unique
their
per person or even, yeah, per firm or even per person in that firm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's touted as the I guess, one of the next applicable waves in these AI technologies, isn't that cost of code is close to zero. These agents are intelligent enough to, you know, build a web page. Therefore, they're intelligent enough to build an interface for you on the fly. So I'm colorblind. It knows that what I see and what Patrick sees.
Great point. Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be tailored towards our accessibility. As a simple example, I'm a visual learner. My wife loves, you know, she underlines every line of the 56-page SOA that we've read, and she'll, you know, double back on it and add tags. She's a different learner in terms of how she processes information. So I absolutely see it personalizing the experience for each and every one of us. I do think that's really one of the more difficult ones to get through, because you've now, you know, you build one interface for everyone, and now you've got to side, you know, 8 billion interfaces, you know, in your central processing. So it'd be an interesting place to I don't see why that isn't the inevitable in terms of screen interaction. I think it's a while away just from practicalities. Yeah.
I think a more realistic example would be, maybe particularly in your area of the problems you're trying to solve, is addressing that problem on the SOA side, right? Like, in terms of, you just mentioned your learning styles are different to your partners. Imagine having the same SOA delivered differently, but it's the same advice and catered towards that person.
Yeah, precisely. And in that example, you know, there's that stage difference between, with coding, you know, close to cost of zero, I have five different ways of presenting an SOA, and I can let my agent dynamically decide how well that person likes to engage with it and deliver them that, or give them the option.
Absolutely. I love it. And as listeners will know, I talk a lot about hypotheticals and there's not much data or stats. I'm always talking about 15 tools in the Net Wealth Advice Tech Report. But Clinton, you've done some heavy lifting and hard work on the case study front in the US, so on AI and advice tech. Have you got any tips and tricks for us there or any insights from those case studies? What did you focus on?
Yeah, so we did a scan of what's happening in the US. We did a little bit in the UK too. I think a couple of things broadly stood out. One, particularly in the sector of financial services, the US is actually a bit of a slow adopter in enterprise and enterprise experience. You guys speak to checks. They still do checks, right? I mean, tap to pay, that's the future for them. So there's a level of rigidity and slow adoption to this sort of stuff in financial services. However, when we look at how they've adapted to using AI in their businesses, it's on par, if not leading edge in terms of sort of global adoption of AI. So we're seeing the likes of Morgan Stanley, a year ago, almost just rolling out that core foundation model to their users, training up a very specific agent for their 16,000 advisors to trawl through their data. That was an incredible success for them. They went on to go build a debrief tool, which then now does that synthesis and starts to follow up with clients on meetings, starts recording, looking at compliance, looking at intent behind those conversations. And you look at that as a case study where, that's a firm. I mean, they're pretty large. They've got the bankroll to do it, but they've rolled out something to 16,000 advisors and they're seeing an immediate uplift. Now we're seeing that in pockets here too. We've got a more fragmented, a cottage industry compared to the big wirehouses in the US. But for us to all be on par in terms of the adoption, I think is quite incredible. I think we're going to benefit from seeing certainly what those tools and capabilities are that side. The second is probably platform called FP Alpha, where we saw them focused heavily on data capture, again, meetings, data uploads, and then partnering with sort of more common financial planning tools out there, eMoney Advisor, to now create those partnerships, those MCPs, and how they're actually engaging with one another to share data. So what we're seeing more and more of, highlights for us is more partnerships. In the US, there seems to be a lot more appetite to collaborate between these organizations. I think there are so many.
Yeah.
Naturally, a lot of smaller players need to collaborate. They find a lot of synergy in that. It happens relatively quickly. Again, I think that's something we can take a lot away from. And I think they're seeing sort of net benefits in terms of, more people served in sort of advice and investment management, the heavier business that side. And, there was another one with Zox, which is sort of one of the leading sort of AI platforms in the US, and Rife Capital doing a lot of the similar that we've talked to here already, right? Digesting a large, significant amount of data, making that machine readable, human readable, pulling out insights and actually starting to be able to generate documents, related to insurance and advice and predominantly sort of investment advice and that side of the world. What's good, I think, about that trend report is there's nothing futuristic about that. It aligns very much with what we're seeing and doing in Australia. So I think that's great to be on a par. It's always interesting to see the US on the leading edge of something like this, because they're just not traditionally been on it when it comes to enterprise and user experience and adoption. And then, we probably talk a bit in a couple of webinars in the UK. And again, just playing back very similar questions. Everybody's looking at evaluating meeting note takers, suitability letter reports. And again, what we found as a trend was they're very much broadly on par and asking the same questions that Australia are asking. So I think the confluence of that is you've got these three Western countries who are essentially level set in terms of the trend and the adoption and how they're being adopted, which is great. That means Australia's on the vanguard as well, because we're building some of these incredible tools, platforms, and serving more and more people. And the meta takeaway from all of that, when we looked at the progress of a lot of those providers, is a very clear maturity map and ladder that we see them following. And one is that least mature, it's very passive. It's your transcription tool. So you're at the box co-pilot. Your level two is moving into that more foundational infrastructure, and that is essentially integration. How am I integrating with your CRM or your data provider? Your level three is how I'm actually interjecting within your workflow. How am I actually processing data, tracking workflow, writing a report, right? The agentic stuff that we talked through. The level four, where no one's near at the moment, but it's that strategic assistant. It's that command center. We've touched on it a little bit tonight, right? Just talking about how that supercharged AI agent can start to run every aspect of your business. That is on the horizon. That's where we're going to see 2026, 2027. Those tools start to take over more and more of that experience layer, the context layer over all those platforms, which I'm pretty excited to see play out and be a part of that.
Totally. Oh, that's fantastic insight. Thank you, Clinton. I love how you've been able to distill that into those four levels. And I'm sure in a year's time or whenever we catch up, hopefully a little bit earlier than that, we'll be talking about, I guess it's the bouncing ball layer, isn't it? In terms of taking action, reporting back, and then the actual proactive insights, as you mentioned before.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's engaging where the work is happening. It's the back and forth. It's leveling up in terms of stacking all that context and action to actually, you know, make a real difference in the day-to-day.
Awesome. Clinton, we are running out of time. I really, really appreciate your time and the chat today. If we had any tips for advisors or just financial planning professionals going into 2026, have you got any for them? Where do we start? We're at level three now in terms of that adoption curve or level three AI. Yeah, any sort of general tips and tricks?
Look, the first is to try. I think the beauty again with a lot of these tools is they're relatively low commitment. They can look quite intimidating on the front, but they're a low commitment. You're not rehauling your CRM. You're not rehauling your account management system. And so giving it a try, having a pilot, testing it out amongst your team, I think that's first and foremost thing to do. You know, secondly, I think there's often with the bigger companies we chat to, a analysis paralysis when it comes to ROI.
Totally.
You know, it's very understandable to look at new tech and new platform and understand what are the net benefits here. This stuff moves quite quickly. I think I can't remember if it was JP Morgan was saying that they don't track ROI, that they know its value add. They don't plan on tracking ROI. They're just rolling it out. I think that is certainly, I'm not saying, you know, throw out all your checks and balances for looking at whether something's going to actually make a return, but be very clear on your use case, test the water and try it out. Low commitment. And these tools need to and should be providing you value out of the box. It should be 15 minutes and you should have saved time. You should be using a tool to create notes, to create advice, to be getting insights. Any more than that, you know, you might as well try something else. So get the value out of it.
Love it. And then sort of practically, I'm just thinking about, you know, having a play or a crack without anything going wrong or needing to go to get approval, et cetera. Do you keep tabs on, you know, what's in the Microsoft suite or like tools like Power Automate, Copilot Studio, those sort of things, Zapier? Do you see, I'm just trying to think about, clearly we have moved past file notes and it's really about, you know, how do we create that bouncing ball process? If you wanted to have a play in a walled garden, but in a sandbox, would that be a nice place to start sort of practically? What are your sort of thoughts there?
Your ideal scenario is if you can get a sandbox, a test account, and all the likes. You certainly don't want to be experimenting with live data. Absolutely. I think, I mean, I always take it for granted, but goes part and parcel with doing your homework around that company's data sovereignty, cybersecurity. You know, are they checking the right boxes? Are they a reputable company? And then once they've passed that gate, then yes, what is your sandbox? What is your demo account? How can I use that? And then step two, slowly start introducing, you know, live data that you can actually test the water with.
Awesome.
You know, I am a sort of ex-consultant, so I've, you know, very sort of step-by-step, you know.
Methodical.
Make sure you're hitting all your check marks. At the same time, I see so many people out there just dropping stuff into things that they shouldn't, which is the other side of the coin, is if beyond enabling your team to use these tools, they're going to be putting stuff where maybe the lines are gray in terms of whether they should or shouldn't. And then you start creating this shadow IT economy. So again, I think it's in everyone's imperative to figure out these tools, make sure they fit for your organization, try them out, and make sure that your team are actually, you know, up to task to adopting them.
Yeah, I think I'm totally within the shadow IT. And I also think they are ripe for, like, if you've got the ability or you're at that stage, whether it's level two, 2.5, 3, to be able to think about tools like MCP, it's a fantastic thing to put in there. I, to bring my own maybe sort of case study example in a biased way, given we work so close with Wocado. But I mean, they released their internal enterprise MCP servers. They were using Claude as a business, and I think they saw an increase of, I think they the metric they used was chats per day from, so bringing all of their internal business data, so whether it was Salesforce or Slack or other tools into Claude to become accessible, I think they saw something like go from 200 chats a day to over 1,200 chats a day. So just literally just connecting their tools into where people are already working. It could be, it can be a great middle ground to meet people where they are, but also just respect that the world is different now and we're not all living out of big chunky clunkies or Word or Excel or, you know, Salesforce, CRMs, et cetera, HubSpot, Fin 365, all those sort of ones. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot to think about. Clinton, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for taking us through where we are now and where we're heading. What's the best way for someone to learn more about AdviseWell or get in touch with yourself?
Sure, you can, you know, drop me a note on LinkedIn. Always happy to chat. Otherwise, you can go to the AdviseWell.co website. You know, book a meeting, have a look, see if there's anything of interest. I love chatting all things AI and advice. So whether it's just to get a sense check of what we're seeing and share our thoughts and our opinion, we're more than happy to chat about it.
Awesome. Clinton, thanks again.
Brilliant. Thanks, Pat. Cheers.